Hello, this is Rita Schulte with the Bloomington Pantograph excerpts from Saturday, November 21st, Sunday, November 22nd, and Monday, November 23rd. We'll begin this half hour with a story on page A1 that reads, Dietz to retire from ISU. President to leave June 30th says virus led to look at 50-year career. The COVID-19 pandemic didn't push Larry Dietz out of the presidency at Illinois State University, but it caused him to become more reflective, he said, Friday after announcing he will retire on June 30th. Dietz, 72, did the math. As of January 4th, 2021, I will have worked in higher education for 50 years. Four institutions, three states, said Dietz. A pandemic causes people to reflect more. It's not forcing me out. Dietz has been at ISU nearly a decade, the last 6.5 years as its leader. He and his wife, Marlene, plan to remain in the community and stay active in volunteer work. It was a question during an open house on Zoom with 1,000 prospective students and their families in late summer that triggered more reflection, he said. The third question was, what have you learned in the pandemic? Marlene and I have been talking about that ever since, said Dietz. The pandemic is clearly the biggest challenge that I've had in my career, he said. And the 2 years without a state budget were certainly a challenge. Among the things Dietz said he had learned during the pandemic are resilience and persistence. I've also learned about gratitude. I am very thankful for my health and the health of my family, friends, and colleagues. He said it also caused him to be very thankful for our freedoms. He said it also caused him to be very thankful for our freedoms. We've had a little crimp in that because of COVID-19 restrictions. In time, it will be seen as an inconvenience. Enlisting accomplishments he is proud of, such as a record-breaking fundraising campaign, work on diversity and inclusion, development of a multicultural center, program enhancements, progress toward an engineering program, and faculty improvements, Dietz said none of that was done alone, and gave credit to the board, faculty, and staff. Dietz said, I think I'm leaving the institution in a good place, but emphasized he still has a lot of work to do in the next 7 months. I'm going to continue to work my head off until I'm not sitting in this chair, he said. Among the challenges ahead, in addition to dealing with the continuing pandemic, will be the fiscal 2022 budget, which Governor J.B. Pritzker has already indicated is likely to include cuts to higher education. A search for his predecessor, or his successor, rather, will begin immediately, said Board of Trustees Chair Julie Jones. A special meeting will be scheduled before the end of the year to extend his contract, plan the search, and address other matters, she said. In February, the Board of Trustees awarded Dietz a performance bonus of $48,000 on top of his base salary of $375,000. In May, the board extended his contract through the end of the year. At the time, Board Chair Julie Jones said the board had intended to have a contract ready for approval in May, but COVID-19 had other plans for our lives. She said Friday the board fully intended to extend his contract beyond December 31st. We are all a little shocked by his decision to retire, said Jones. The one thing that I'm grateful for, and it stands out to me, is that he led this university through some challenging times, she said. Dietz was named as ISU's 19th president in March 2014 after the short tenure of Timothy Flanagan. Serving as vice president of student affairs at the time, Dietz had been a finalist for the position when Flanagan was elected in 2013. He's popular with the students and known for a casual down-home style, using terms like terrific and hunky-dory, and frequently mentioning growing up on a dairy farm in southern Illinois. He shepherded ISU through the budget impasse, helping it to stay strong and stable, one of his favorite descriptions, as most other state universities struggled to maintain enrollment and avoid furloughs and staff reductions. Among accomplishments during his tenure as president was a successful fundraising campaign, Redbirds Rising, that raised a record $180.9 million, that is, by the time it concluded in July, far exceeding its original goal of $150 million. There have been tough times, too. Rallies by students who claimed ISU was anti-black, and a plane crash in 2015 that took the lives of two members of the athletics department and five others on board. He had been at ISU since 2011, first joining the staff as vice president for student affairs and a professor in the Department of Education Administration and Foundations. He was vice chancellor for student affairs at Southern Illinois University at Carbondale for 11 years before coming to ISU. Asked what he will miss, Dietz said, "It's always the people," citing that as a reason for staying in the community. "I've had a terrific leadership team, great faculty, staff, and students, and a supportive alumni," he said. In addition to staying connected and doing volunteer work in the community, Dietz said, "We don't have any massive plans. When we're allowed to, we would like to travel more." Also from page one, the headline is "No City COVID Penalties for 12 Bars. Liquor Commission says future violators risk fines and suspensions." 12 Bloomington bars were warned Friday by the City Liquor Commission that any future violations for disregarding state restrictions on bars and restaurants will result in fines or possible suspension of liquor licenses. Restrictions announced on November 1st by Governor J.B. Pritzker specified bars and restaurants must discontinue indoor service, have all outdoor service end by 11 p.m., and have all patrons seated outside at tables at least 6 feet apart. In addition, meetings and social gatherings were limited to 25 people or 25% of room capacity, whichever is less. Last week, Bloomington police forwarded information to the city's legal department that a dozen establishments violated the indoor service and 11 p.m. closing time restrictions last weekend. On Tuesday, Bloomington Mayor and Liquor Commissioner Tari Renner ordered those liquor license holders for 12 Bloomington bars to appear at a special Liquor Commission meeting on Friday and be prepared to argue their case. On Friday, Renner said the city was not going to pursue the current charges, but made it clear that going forward, any violation would result in consequences. "Going forward, the city will be enforcing these through liquor license enforcement procedures, which are our primary tool of enforcement," he said. The 12 establishments cited for violating the required 11 p.m. closing hour and allowing indoor drinking. They were Windjammer at 2393 Stern Drive, Cadillac Jack's at 1507 South Main Street, Killarney's at 523 North Main Street, Fat Jack's at 511 North Main Street, Daddy-O's at 527 North Main Street, Drifters at 612 North Main Street, McGuire's at 109 East Olive, Chasers at 110 West Washington, Six Strings at 525 North Center, Elroy's at 102 West Washington Street, Mulligan's at 531 North Main Street, and Reality Bites at 414 North Main Street. Daddy-O's did plead guilty to a mandatory mask enforcement regulation and will pay a $500 fine, City Attorney George Boyle said. Cadillac Jack's owner, Bill Bentley, said the bar owners needed more clarity from Renner on what actions would be enforced and what actions wouldn't. "My question is that you are wanting us to follow all of these directions that the governor has put down, but what does that mean? Is the Bloomington Police Department going to be going around checking people?" Bentley also understood that bars are supposed to be taking reservations, and anyone who wants to walk in, bars are required to get a name and a phone number for contact tracing purposes. How far are we willing to go here, he added. The undue hardship put on me is totally different than the undue hardship put on Walmart and all of the other box stores. Renner said that the two ways the police department becomes aware of potential violations is through their routine inspections and through formal complaints. Those are the things that we are going to continue to rely on, Renner said. We are not going to triple our police force to go to all of these establishments to see what they're doing. Boyle said the city can enforce the executive orders because the liquor licenses must comply with health and safety regulations and with all the codes for health and safety in the city of Bloomington. Our belief is that in the state of Illinois, the gubernatorial emergency orders that have been upheld by the courts are pertinent health and safety regulations in the city of Bloomington, and we will enforce those accordingly, he said. For Cadillac Jack's, it was the second violation since September 8th. At that time, the bar was found to be in noncompliance of the measures in effect at the time and for disregarding multiple warnings from law enforcement. The bar was fined $1,500. On Tuesday, Pritzker announced a series of new statewide coronavirus restrictions, including more limits on capacity in stores and shuttering casinos and museums temporarily starting Friday. Under the restrictions, retailers must lower customer capacity to fit 25% from the current 50%, though grocery stores will be excluded and can operate at 50% capacity. Gyms will also be capped at 25%, and indoor classes will no longer be allowed. Gaming and casino facilities are required to close, as well as indoor recreation facilities, theaters, and museums, although outdoor activities will be allowed to continue with limited capacity. Hair and nail salons and massage facilities will be allowed to stay open but must adhere to additional capacity limits under the new restrictions. From page A3, Mead to run on taxes in Ward 3. Derek Mead, a lifelong McLean County resident, announced Friday that he will run for Bloomington Ward 3 alderman in the April 6 municipal election. Mead said he plans to run on the platform of lowering taxes, a return to the basics of providing essential services, good stewardship of the citizens' resources, and reducing the tax burden of the hardworking folks that fund our city are the ideals that will guide my representation of the residents of Ward 3, Mead said in a statement. The ward covers an area east of Hershey Road and between Oakland Avenue and General Electric Road. He credited his strong roots in the county in Ward 3 for his confidence in representing the ward. Mead specifically mentioned the Leroy and Tri-Valley school districts as well as his alma mater, Illinois State University. The seat is held by Alderman Mboka M. Willoughby, who recently announced he would not seek re-election. Also from page A3, the headline reads, Hospital Beds Filling Up. Virus tests, Bloomington normal care capacity, and officials are warned about the holidays. Keep your Thanksgiving gatherings to your immediate family to protect elderly relatives and help hospital workers. That was a message on Friday from public health and healthcare professionals as hospital bed availability was dropping in part because of the surge in COVID-19 cases. There are currently over 50 individuals hospitalized in McLean County hospitals for COVID-19. County Health Department Administrator Jessica McKnight said on Friday, our hospitals are reporting 94% of ICU, intensive care unit beds, in use and 91% of total beds in use. While 15 McLean County residents were hospitalized with the virus, more than 50 people were hospitalized with COVID-19 because Twin City hospitals also care for people from neighboring counties. Lynn Fulton, president of OSF Healthcare in Bloomington Medical Center, and Colleen Canaday, president of Carl Bromed Medical Center in Normal, said later Friday that discharge decreased those numbers slightly, but the situation was fluid. Our intensive care unit is close to full, Kanade said. We do have the capacity to provide that same level of care in other areas of the hospital, but it requires additional staff and other resources, Fulton said. Our occupancy has doubled from about 75% to 90% over the past few weeks, with the ISU often at capacity. That is concerning, as we are going into the holiday week, Fulton said. So far, we have not had to cancel elective cases. OSF has enacted our surge plan throughout our system, and we are meeting regularly to monitor. Locally, we opened a medical unit for patients with COVID-19 and have expanded our capacity. A few important points to keep in mind as our community plans their holiday activities, Fulton said. Patients with COVID-19 tend to stay in the ICU and in the hospital for a long period of time. We work with our sister hospitals throughout Illinois to serve our patients, but hospital capacity and healthcare providers are finite. We can enable every surge plan possible, but at the same point, there is an end. Kanade said, this is a critical time in our fight against this disease, and we ask that you stay home as much as possible and limit in-person interactions. We expect our numbers to increase. We have the capacity to expand our capacity to non-traditional settings within the hospital, but we would certainly rather see our communities stay safe and healthy. Fulton said recent data has identified small gatherings as hotbeds for spreading the virus. That's largely due to a lack of physical distancing. The safest thing for everyone is to stay home and celebrate with the people in their own household. McKnight said the health department and partnering agencies are looking at alternative care sites if Bloomington Normal Hospitals fill up. If the County Emergency Operations Center receives a resource request from the hospitals, the county and partnering agencies could set up an alternative care site quickly, but any site would need healthcare staffing. This is a limited workforce that is taken for granted, McKnight said. She said people should stay home as much as possible and wear a mask and stay 6 feet away from others when in public, because this ultimately will help healthcare workers. McKnight reported Friday that 178 more county residents had been diagnosed with the virus, meaning 1,136 county residents have tested positive in the past week as COVID continues its surge in Illinois. Since March, 7,352 county residents have been diagnosed with COVID. McKnight also reported that a man in his 80s who was not associated with a long-term care facility had died in McLean County's 48th COVID-related death. Asked where COVID was trending, McKnight said, it's everywhere. We're just the ones moving the virus. We need to be the ones to stop it, she said. Encouraging COVID news in McLean County on Friday was that 345 more people had recovered from the virus since Thursday, bringing the total number of people recovered up to 5,920. And the county's 7-day positivity rate, the percentage of county residents tested for COVID in the past week who have tested positive, declined again from 11.3% on Thursday to 10% on Friday. McKnight also reported on Friday that 1,369 people were isolating at home, 166 fewer than on Thursday. Asked whether that encouraging news was a trend, McKnight said, we don't know that yet, and asked people to remain vigilant going into Thanksgiving. We take our foot off the gas, we could be in a difficult situation a month from now, McKnight said. Friday was the first day of new statewide mitigations, limiting capacity at retail stores and other businesses, and requiring casinos and video gaming terminals to close. McKnight said the mitigation strategies were based on science and would help to control the virus. At Governor J.B. Pritzker's Friday COVID briefing, the family of Danny Cater of Bloomington, who died of COVID, complications at age 30 on November 3rd, shared their story. Her husband and parents spoke with the Pantograph earlier this month. "No, these are not just numbers. They're not just statistics," Cater's mother, Tina Rubin, said during the briefing. "These are real people with real lives and real futures that have been stolen by this virus." And from Sunday's paper, the first story headlined, "Assessing Access, People with Disabilities, No Progress, and Challenges in Bloomington Normal on the 30th Anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act." As a wheelchair user, Nettie Akari, 57, knows what sidewalks and streets can be trouble for those with mobility issues. Carrie has cerebral palsy and takes public transportation to get to the nursing home where she lives to a volunteer position at Life Center for Independent Living. "I wouldn't rate Bloomington Normal as being a totally accessible place," said Carrie, an area resident for most of her life. "Crossing streets can be hard because of high curbs. Cars are also not always willing to let us have the right-of-way, and it's scary." The year marks the three decades since President George H.W. Bush signed into law the landmark Americans with Disabilities Act, a sweeping piece of legislation that mandated virtually all public facilities be accessible for people with disabilities. The outcome has been a litany of alterations and features that are commonplace in everyday life today, from Braille on public signs and access ramps on buildings to widened bathroom stalls for wheelchairs. And while progress has been made in many areas, both those with mobility issues and public officials say more needs to be done, especially with two specific spaces crucial for this population group, sidewalks and bus stops. The city and town public works departments have been working on this, and that is something we need to applaud, said Conan Calhoun, a disability rights advocate for the Life Center. Calhoun conducts audits of businesses, public buildings, and sidewalks to gauge if the spaces are accessible to people with disabilities. His findings show many areas that are encouraging, he said, but Calhoun added, "We are very far behind compared to other cities. The delays are the product of several overlapping factors, from updated regulations since the ADA was signed to issues with funding, which may become more pronounced as COVID stretches resources. But perhaps the biggest factor is the sheer number of fixes needed. Even three decades after Bush's bill signing ceremony on the south lawn of the White House, case in point, Bloomington alone has 423 miles of sidewalks that are going to be improved as part of a sidewalk master plan. That's 423 miles of curbs, ramps, and signs, the equivalent distance from Bloomington to Little Rock, Arkansas, in a straight line. That volume is one reason why Bloomington is only about halfway through its sidewalk master plan, adopted 5 years ago. Work also has been slowed by weather, costs, and disrepair from use. There are plenty of variables with each sidewalk, said Kevin Coffey, a 32-year veteran of the Bloomington Public Works Department, where he is now director. The sidewalk work may be as simple as having a company come in and grind the sidewalk where there is a vertical displacement that creates a barrier for somebody in a wheelchair, or using a walker or cane, he said. The corner ramps are very critical for ADA accessibility, and those are quite a bit more expensive to take care of. But it is something that is required when we do surface work. About $1 million is set aside, but there's still a long way to go. In fact, it's difficult to even calculate an end date, he said. There's a lot of miles of sidewalk in Bloomington, and we can't do it all in 1 year, he said. One complicating factor is the current fiscal outlook. COVID-19 means fewer people are driving, which diminishes motor fuel tax receipts, the fund that pays for fixes. Coffey projects that could have an impact on how many are completed each year. The goal of the city is going to have accessibility pedestrian accommodations, and we will keep working on it until we are done, and we may never be done, Coffey said. That's partially, because the rules literally keep changing. Several amendments have passed to increase physical accessibility. Officials say keeping up with the alterations can sometimes delay improvement projects. One of the main things that has changed is what we call the detectable warning strip, said Normal town engineer Ryan Otto, referring to the raised circles seen on sidewalk ramps. ADA standards use a different pattern, but updated practices call for additional detection to help people who can't see well find where the ramp starts. Otto said about 30% of sidewalks have been inspected using a scale the town uses, and most fall into the fairly good category. In general, our sidewalks are in serviceable condition in most places, he said. We are working to assess the condition of the sidewalks and upgrade all of our ramps to ADA-compliant accessibility. About 1 in 4 Americans, American adults, that is, have a disability, and about 22% in Illinois do. Typically, larger concentrations of disabled people are found in urban areas, in part because of access to public transportation. By 2050, it is expected that about 6.25 billion people, 15% of whom are persons with disabilities, will be urban dwellers, according to the United Nations Department of Economic and Social Affairs. Normal Town Councilwoman Karen Smith, an advocate for accessibility programs and services for people with disabilities, said a big-picture approach needs to be taken with public transportation. It's an issue if you've got a bus stop across a busy intersection, and the bus is traveling northbound, but your stop requires you to cross the street, Smith said, adding that it's not simply a mobility issue. Connect Transit in 2018 also set a goal of getting all 463 bus stops ADA compliant by 2024. A 2017 inspection of stops around found some shortcomings, said Mark Peterson, the agency's interim manager. The biggest problem was there was no good way to get from the stop to the bus because there was no hard surface path to get to the curb, he said. He said that is largely due to changed routes and moving into areas that had previously no bus stops, creating more gaps. That created more inaccessible stops, he said. In some cases, we didn't even have them, and we had to create them. Since then, 145 bus stops have been brought up to meet standards. Upgrading one bus stop can cost about $7,000, depending upon whether new shelters, lights, or ramps are needed. The Illinois Department of Transportation also awarded $9.92 million to Connect Transit through Governor J.B. Pritzker's Rebuild America Capital Program. A total of $516,000 is for improving or upgrading 196 bus stops. Last year, the Connect Transit Board formed the Connect to the Future work group to work on community engagement. Smith, the Normal council member, has been following the progress and has heard criticisms her constituents have about the pace of improvements. Peterson said improvements are being made and it is a focus. The good news is that we're getting there, Peterson said. We are making progress. Conan Calhoun, a disability rights advocate, says it can sometimes be difficult for change to happen quickly, and there are sometimes errors in judgment, too, he said. I applaud the work Bloomington Normal has done so far, but we still have a way to go, he said. The conversation about accessibility is 30 years in the making. Ms. Carey, also a disability advocate with cerebral palsy, says she just wants everyone to know that people with disabilities just want to be treated like everybody else. We do have a voice, and we want to be heard. This has been Rita Schulte with the first half hour of selections from the Bloomington Pantograph from Saturday, November 21st, Sunday, November 22nd, and Monday, September 23rd. I will return in just a few moments with part 2. Please stay with me.